All right, welcome everyone. It is 2021. It is January the 22nd. I think we do a time check at the start of the episode anyway, but we are recording this post the episode. I'm your host on Open the Pod Bay Doors News Special, Ian Gardner, or one of the co-hosts, along with Faden Stow. Welcome back, Faden. Happy New Year.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back, mate. Did you have a good Christmas?
Yeah, well, we've been working hard for 3 weeks. So I did have a good Christmas. Feels like a long time ago. Mm-hmm. First warm Christmas for a long time for me. I'm normally over in Colorado skiing, but not allowed this year. But really enjoyed it. It's been great. What about you?
Did you kind of dress up in your ski gear and pop bottles of champagne and stuff like that?
No, I didn't. I just put on my boardies and thongs and went down the beach. In fact, I don't think that's not true. I haven't been down the beach once. Nice. I'm not very Australian in that sense. Mm-hmm. What about you? How was Hobart?
Hobart's great, thanks to global warming. So we no longer have snow at Christmas time. We just have good weather. So it's been good. And like you, it's been super busy for us. So Super excited about a huge 2021 for Innovation Bay.
Yeah. So what are we most excited about?
I think expanding the membership framework of the business and launching a few new membership tiers. We've just closed out our first intake of our angel network, Horizon.
Yep.
And that's super exciting, as we well have done with our venture group, Aurora.
Yeah.
And then super excited about expanding our Summit Club, our Series A Founder Club, and then launching our Seed Club, Canopy, in the middle of the year.
Yeah. So by this time next year, we will have all four membership tiers running. Maybe we should just do a little insight as to why we do it. I mean, Innovation Bay at its core is a community builder. We love the startup community and we love helping people within that. But ultimately, sometimes the best way to help people is to get them together. Let them help each other. And that's really been the principle behind Summit. And it's been great. And some of the stories that are coming out of that, some of the performance from those companies and some of the feedback we get, it's I did strategy X because I heard from company Y, when they went through something similar, it avoids the same pitfalls that others people go through.
I don't think we would be doing this if Summit wasn't so successful.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And we saw how much value that was being added there.
Yeah.
So that's really kind of where we started, isn't it?
Yeah. And look, it is a new year. So we've still got COVID dragging along. I mean, the numbers are good today and the restrictions seem to be easing again, but you see how easy it can flare up. And it doesn't take much for this nasty little virus to get out in the wild.
I think we're just all over it, aren't we? We're just got to, but we're not out of the woods yet.
Yeah, we're not.
But also, I mean, with the business, we've also got to say we just brought on a new chief of staff, which is super exciting, Anna.
So, and in fact, thanks to COVID, pretty much. I mean, she was working in Toronto, and we'd mentioned maybe her in one of the previous ones, but she's now full-time with us.
That is the silver lining of COVID, isn't it? Because we've also got Andy McEwen on the show coming up, and he's just, come back from San Francisco because of COVID.
Yeah, he's safety culture.
Amazing guy.
Yeah, so I think 400,000 Aussies have come home from overseas this year. They're probably all staying at their parents' house or they're driving up rents, who knows. But there's a lot of talent within that and it has cascaded through, I think, to the startup ecosystem. So I think we are getting some benefit from that. So super exciting there.
Well, and again, on that note, we've just hired a content manager.
Yep, we have.
So we're really going to drive a lot of awesome content. And the reason for that is we were working with someone, Alison, before. She was going to go back home to the US and decided not to.
Yeah.
So that's another silver lining of COVID.
It is. Yeah, she's great. She's got an MBA. She's super smart. She's great. A great writer. So a lot of the newsletters and things you might see from us has her pen behind it. So yeah, look, we've basically got a full-time team of almost six of us now. So it's growing and we'll probably be adding to that this year. So for each of those member tiers, we're probably likely to be bringing on someone to help with them. And that's super exciting. The business is in good shape. Our sponsors seem to be happy. We love our sponsors. They are really good.
We do. And we need more early stage founders to come to us because we've got a great platform now with this really incredible angel group, Horizon.
Yeah.
And we are actively looking for early stage companies to present. And we're doing it in a really meaningful and founder first way.
Yeah. So give us some insight into that. So what is Horizon? How does it work, Faden, just for the audience?
Yeah. We really wanted to bring experienced smart money investors together so they could co-invest and drive the volume of investment of what they're doing currently. And so we've done that in Melbourne and Sydney. We're going to be doing a monthly newsletter to them and then quarterly in-person events. The quarterly in-person events will be themed, but the monthly newsletters will just be the best and the most exciting, interesting early stage companies we can find.
Yeah, no, and that's great. So yeah, look, we want to hear from you. If you're raising money and you're a great business, then ping us. I think we'll put the details on the website. We are going to go live with our, we have a new website in the works. always seems weird when companies talk about their website and how excited they are about launching it. It's probably because so much work goes in the background, and then most people, when it goes live, are like, oh, meh, what? Mm. But yeah, we've got some new branding and a new website coming, but that should be live in, I reckon, March.
As we quickly wrap up here in this intro, what are you most excited about, mate, in 2021?
I think it's the membership. It's adding value to the members across the board. It's just been terrific seeing the impact that we've had. I guess Canopy, when we launch it, I mean, that's the big one. I mean, that is for earlier stage businesses. I mean, Summit is for Series A and beyond. So you can kind of, you know, throw a blanket over the number of people there. Canopy is going to be a much broader group, and I can't wait to get started with that and help those people and add value to them, because you know they can help themselves. We've just got to work out how to do it. It's not that we only want scale. We don't. We want impact. But how do you create impact at scale? And that is very difficult. So it's exciting but also challenging. What about you?
Yeah, ditto. I'm excited about going heli skiing in New Zealand. So this is my message to the New Zealand government: don't stop us from coming over. We need to come to New Zealand.
Yeah. I mean, there's no heli skiing in Tasmania.
Not yet, but it could be if the New Zealand government doesn't open.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, let's before we jump over, like, who's on the show this week?
Well, as we just sort of said, we got Andy McEwen, who's just come back after a couple of years. He's been over a decade in the US. He's worked for some amazing companies, including Apple and Facebook.
Yep.
And just finished up with the US Olympic ski team. And now he's back working for Safety Culture.
Yeah, we love Luke. We love Safety Culture. We've got Francis Veerboom. We do get them all to introduce themselves, so we won't go into it too deeply. But Francis was one of the founders at Propeller, then went on to work at the AWS startup team. And now he's taken a bit of time out to become a dad, which I think is awesome.
Awesome.
I mean, it's not a full-time, it's not a forever thing for him. So he'll be back in the ecosystem before we know it, but he has just taken time.
Just an all-round good guy and one of the smartest guys you're ever going to meet.
Yeah. And they're very excited to have Marissa. So Marissa Warren, she is one of the co-founders at a new venture firm called Alia Via, along with Kate Vale. So Kate was part of the Innovation Bay network years ago. She spoke. She was at Spotify and Google. And Marissa's done a lot of different things as a founder and she was at Elevaco and a few other places. So she's based in LA. We go in a little bit into the whole US Donald Trump presidency and, you know, all the social media moves against him and whatnot. So yeah, pretty interesting show, lots of content. So shall we go over and listen to ourselves talking about the news?
Let us do it.
All right, we'll see you all there. All right, welcome to the show, everyone. We're back. It's 2021. Let's do a time check. It is 12 p.m. So it's noon on Friday, the 22nd of January. I'm back. I'm Ian Gardner. I'm here with Faden Stow, who's my co-conspirator in Tasmania. Hey, Faden.
Hello, everyone.
Yeah. And we've assembled an awesome panel, as ever. So we've got a founder, an investor, and an ecosystem leader. So let's do a quick round of intros. So Marissa, I might start with you. You're an Aussie living in LA. You're now a venture capitalist. You've launched a new woman-focused VC called Alia Via. So for a while, it didn't have a name. Do you want to give us a little bit of insight into what you're up to?
Sure, absolutely. So started Alia Via Ventures, which is actually Latin for another way. So I started that with my co-founder, Kate Vale. She was the first employee and managing director at both Google Australia and Spotify. So help launch those businesses in market and a successful angel investor. But yeah, essentially,
Kate actually spoke at an Innovation Bay event probably 10 years ago.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a small ecosystem.
And is she in LA as well?
Yes, she is. She's just 45 minutes away from me, actually.
And tell us the thesis. So how much money are you investing and what are you investing in?
Sure. So our firm, we back female founders. And we classify that as there must be at least one female founder on the founding team with a significant equity position and C-level role. So it's not just backing the token female. There needs to be that diversity at the founding level. Then we also look at from a geographic perspective. So we're investing in pre-seed, seed stage businesses, both in Australia and the US.
Awesome.
So we're a US-based firm. So we're helping those Aussie businesses that are going, that they want, you know, they want to eventually expand to the US, and we can make that happen very easily for them.
Great. All right. Well, welcome to the show. Frances, might jump to you all the way down to Rule. So kind of escaped Sydney at the sensible time. So yeah, you've done everything. So you were one of the co-founders at Propeller, which was at StartMe, and then raised money from Blackbird and quite a few others. You can tell it's Accel and a few other luminaries. And then you spent some time at AWS and now you're doing what? What are you up to, Frances?
I'm just sitting back looking at my t-shirt collection mostly from all the investors. So that's nice. I'm mostly busy being a stay-at-home dad at the moment, which is great. I've had a few months of that with our new second son. But still stay plugged in with Propeller. We had a busy day of board meeting and chats yesterday, and still a really exciting business with a big 2021 ahead as well.
Yeah, awesome. All right. Well, welcome along. And Andy McCune, you are with Safety Culture. So, I mean, we've had your boss Luke on the show a couple of times. I think has he been in the news? I can't remember if he's been in the news, but he's been one of our only two times guests on the podcast. So, tell us about what you're doing there, Andy, and how you fit in.
Sure. I recently just came back from the US. I've been in Silicon Valley for a decade at Apple and Facebook, and came back a few months ago. Good timing, let's just say that. And joined Safety Culture. Super exciting time in the company's history. Looking to scale it globally.
That is awesome. All right. Well, look, shall we jump into the news? The US, well, like part of the reason we assembled this panel with Marissa and Andy in particular is because there is a bit of US focus. In the last month or so has seen a fairly tumultuous time in the US. We've had Donald Trump inciting a riot, get banned from Twitter and Facebook and TikTok and anything else that would ban him. And we've got a new president in the US. Marissa, I might lead off with you. I mean, like, you are in the US. I mean, how is the mood there? And what do you think the impact of the last month or so is going to be on the tech and startup sector going forward?
Sure. I think the mood in the US, I mean, certainly leading up to the election, people could not wait to get out and vote. And there was a lot of rhetoric out there getting out and vote. But I think the attack on the Capitol was just the final straw and the breaking point for many Americans in relation to Trump. It's been a pretty challenging 4 years, and especially last year, 2020, with the coronavirus, how the Trump administration handled that, the impact to the US economy, but then also social media's role in that. So it was really interesting to see that all of those Republicans, 10 Republicans breaking rank and voting to impeach him in the Senate. So that's a pretty historic moment. Also with those platforms banning him, but more importantly, the political donors that, are backing away from not only Trump and the Republican Party, but also the senators that help support Trump as well and spread those messages around the Stop the Steal campaign. So I think I've never seen the US this politically charged before. It's quite an interesting time.
And do you think that's going to calm down now that there's not quite as much of a divisive, strong voice in the center of it all?
Well, I mean, the hope is there. Yes, absolutely. And I mean, Biden was talking very much around peace and coming together and working to rebuild things here. So I think there definitely is that hope. The interesting thing is that you've actually seen some of, Trump's supporters around QAnon and Proud Boys stepping back, calling him weak because they wanted him to continue on that rampage. But so I think that there is certainly hope.
Yeah. And Andy, you spent a bunch of time over there too. What's your observation of what we've been seeing there?
I mean, just to pick up one point, I think it's interesting just the role of, people talking about social media, but we're also kind of forgetting, the role of traditional media at the, probably Trump's biggest platforms being Fox, you know, and that empire. So, you know, we shouldn't discount that as well. You know, there's so many different ways to communicate with people. I think it really became apparent there are two Americas. You know, there was, you know, people on the coasts and in a few different pockets around the country. And then there's, you know, many people in the US that really kind of came to life in a good or bad way, depending on which way you look at it. And it just seems like America is becoming more divided, you know, certainly economically, which I think probably has caused a lot of these problems.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I mean, it's interesting that when we think about the role of big tech in all of this, you know, Twitter in particular. I mean, Twitter's share price was on a tear ever since Donald Trump was their you know, fifth most followed account. And the share price dropped 10% when they kicked him. You know, and they definitely have some responsibility for what was going on. But just the concept of unelected private companies holding as much power over the public discourse as they do is, it's kind of a tough position for any of them to be in, because they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't. I mean, I think before, Francis, let me ask you this one, but before the we recorded this, I sent around a couple of articles from our commentary just talking about whether or not it was right to for the unelected social media private companies to be able to throw their weight around like this. I mean, is that not the job of governments and Congress? Francis?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I actually think to Andy's point that you know, broadcast media is the incumbent in this, and I'd say like what's kind of becoming clear is that really Facebook and Twitter are going to have to move towards something like broadcast editorial media companies. You know, they are also like a site that you go and visit. You know, you have the front page of the paper is just what's in your news feed, and it happens to be assembled by an algorithm instead of a newspaper editor. And if it's full of, you know, crazy stuff, then it's not going to be sustainable. And, you know, Facebook's got a big, difficult job to do that. And I don't think it can necessarily rely on the algorithm. I think, you know, it's coming out of its origins as basically a hot or not website that kind of taps into the lower parts of the brainstem. And it's assumed such an important role in society that it's going to find itself just doing that job. So I don't know. I think that's progress. And probably I think that the traditional broadcast editorial model has a bit going for it and had plenty of problems and still has plenty of problems. But having a bit of a shared consensus on what is acceptable discourse is a good thing for society. Yeah. So I think it's actually a good thing I think it's kind of obviously a good thing that Twitter's taken a step to ban Trump. And I'm maybe less equivocal about it than a lot of people.
Yeah, I don't know. I struggle a little bit with it. I'm a sort of free speech advocate. So, you know, part of me thinks they shouldn't have, but the other part of me is thank God they did. You know, and the reality is it works. You deplatform someone like that and it removes all the oxygen that they were consuming. Marissa?
Yeah, but part of the problem, and I agree to a certain extent as well. I mean, you want to be able to see, you know, the difference. Like, you want to be able to see what Trump's saying, but at the same time, the danger that it had and what it caused here in the US. I mean, even around mask wearing, yeah. I mean, that was so politicized. If you wore a mask, you were deemed a Democrat. If you didn't, you were more Republican and supporting Trump. And because of the lies and the misinformation that was spread around the coronavirus, that Trump just amplified across those different platforms. So that's where it's a challenge, right? You want to be able to hear that, but at the same time, you have people that will then, you know, believe those lies and misinformation. So I think, you know, it's right that the social media companies, you know, did that and banned him. I think there was a little, you know, and we can all say that sitting here from our chairs and not in these organisations making these decisions. But it felt like it was a little too late, you know, especially with, you know, because he went on for years around these lies and misinformation. It was only really in 2020 did any of the platforms start labeling misinformation or taking down posts that were damaging him, because we were seeing the impact of those with how people were dealing with coronavirus here in the US.
Yeah.
Free speech does have the First Amendment, right? So it's not just a free-for-all.
That's true.
Lying, you know, incitement, all these things. There is a measure in place to stop this, and it seems like you crossed the line and the First Amendment kicked in there and it's actually working.
Yeah. And what's our view as to the administration's policy in this? I mean, are we going to see breakups? I mean, there was a rumored breakup of Facebook even into, you know, pulling apart Instagram and WhatsApp. Marissa, you were on the ground there. I mean, are you expecting anything like this to happen?
Well, if we're seeing with the antitrust case, they'll pick that up again with Apple, Facebook, Twitter, Google, Amazon, those companies. I mean, they're all for different reasons why they're being, brought in front of the Senate and going through that. But, I mean, if that does happen, I mean, then there's the flow-on implications to the broader tech ecosystem. But then what opportunities does that open up for other platforms? I mean, we're already starting to see now in the US sort of verticalizing social media platforms come out. So ones for, Gen X type, people wanting to network, so specialize for that, or social platforms for women and the LBG community, et cetera. So if they do go down the path and break up those companies, then what other opportunities does that open up for the startup ecosystem?
Yeah. All right. Look, we might move on
just quickly though.
Yeah, you can come in.
Now, yep. We're having this conversation about Fox and about the Murdoch press. We don't seem to be. I'm just curious as to how do we compare the current sort of monopolistic behaviors of, say, like a Facebook or a Twitter against the Murdoch press?
I mean, I think that's a really good point. And you know, it's not that Facebook didn't invent showing people what they wanted to hear. Media companies have been trying to do that for a long time. So I think it's exactly right to point the finger at that. But it's pretty confusing when you look down under here in Australia at the proposed media regulation, which frankly seems to me like it's a bit of a handout to News Corp. It's a pretty strangely structured piece of regulation that, you know, the media companies are trying to get on side with. But to me, the coverage recently seems to have slipped to make the point that it's pretty confusing to force Google and Facebook to pay news sites to show them in their search results.
Yeah.
And, you know, Google ran an experiment to take news links out of its search. And it seemed like a bit of a quiet broadside across the news companies of like, see how you like it if we just don't list you and don't pay anything.
Well, in fact, just in The Guardian before I pressed record was a headline suggesting that Google will withdraw its entire search engine from Australia if the government pushes ahead with this. So it seems like a pretty serious threat. Yeah, so I don't know. It's a weird world we're living in the big tech regulation sphere.
And Andy, just going back to you, mate, because you obviously spent time at Facebook, in Facebook. You know, what was the mentality like within the organization in terms of this?
Maybe going back to a previous point, like the way we looked at things at Facebook was if it was legal in a country, then it was okay. And if it was illegal, then it wasn't, you know, because there's so many variations and Facebook touches only, you know, just Facebook alone, let alone the whole company group touches, you know, it's nearly 3 billion people. And it's so hard to police. And then you've got all these, you know, decisions that are made. And then you've got, you know, a whole lot of different languages. And then you've got nuances and you've got sarcasm and everything else. So, like, how do you actually try and manage that? So that is super hard. And then with the boxing, I find it interesting. It's kind of like at one end, they're talking about free speech and everything else. And I think that's just because their guy got clipped. I don't know if we'd be having this conversation if it was a Democrat, if like the BLM movement organized that Capitol building riot and killing a policeman and pipe bombs and everything else. I don't think we'd be having it. Imagine if it was a Muslim cleric that did it. Like I just think their guy got dinged, so they're unhappy with it. But at the other end, they're trying to legislate out the freedom of speech and information stuff, exactly what we're talking about in Australia. So it's kind of like politically they wanted that end, and for their business, they want kind of the opposite thing. They want to regulate one part of it and freedom at the other end. So it's the shifting values or lack of values, I think, that concerns a lot of people.
Yeah. All right, look, we're almost 15 minutes in here. So why don't we put a pin in this one? Because we could talk about this all day and I'd love to, but we should probably move on and cover some other news, seeing as we haven't been on air for a month or so. There's an interesting article came out in the AFR looking at some of the projected IPOs that we're likely to see in the ASX this year. So I think it's fair to say that the IPO window is open. I think the success that Macquarie had with Nuix last year, I mean, I think they're trading at something like 20 times revenue in terms of their market cap. And that's, you know, these are insane numbers. I'm not saying it's not worth that. It's not up to me to say that, but it's, yeah, we've definitely got an open window and a few names listed in there. Airtasker is one that was in there. Rockt, R-O-K-T, e-commerce marketing tech. Who else is on there? Blackmagic, which is a video technology. Yeah, so, I mean, there's tons of others too. I mean, Francis, are you excited about the IPOs coming up? Or, I mean, what's your feeling on how it's looking?
I mean, as a founder, it's a great time to, you know, have that option and have that kind of capital out there looking for yield, I think.
Does that mean Propeller's going to list? Is that what you're saying here?
Side-driven trend. No, that is definitely not what I'm saying. But and I mean, it's also the case that like there's not a dissimilar amount of private money that's looking for a place to go as well. I think it'll be an exciting year on the stock market. I think, for those established players, I think they've probably been hanging back. There's a few companies like Airtasker that, you know, are really now they're kind of they're the elders of the startups in Sydney. So it'll be great to see them progress to the next stage as well.
Yeah, and Marissa, I mean, like as an investor, it must be pleasing to see that there's a nice potential exit window. I mean, I think it's maybe a little early for some of yours, but. I mean, what's your view on IPOs and how it's looking?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, 2020 was an absolute bumpy year for IPOs. And it was interesting because it was a combination of a whole lot of different factors. Companies remaining public for longer, but you had a whole lot of those companies that had been public that were gearing up to exit either last year or this year. And a lot of those actually fared very well with the coronavirus. So that, yes, the coronavirus was, you know, just horrific from a global perspective, but it was certainly a bumper for a lot of the tech stocks. So that certainly put a lot of liquidity into the system with those. I mean, it just, you know, IPO after IPO here in the US, just exceeding first day trading. It was great to see, but that's already started here in 2021 with a firm kicking off strongly. So I think Bumble will also be listing later this year. But then in Australia, excited. My co-founder Kate, her husband co-founded Rockt. It'd be good to see that and many other great Australian companies.
You are seeing, I mean, there's been a couple of fairly high profile US companies that you would have expected would list on the in the US exchange, but they've come to Australia. So like Life360 is one of them. And it's mooted that a satellite company, Spire Global, I don't know them, but that was also mentioned in that article as listing on the ASX instead of the US. I mean, is that a trend that you're happy to see? I mean, you're kind of got a foot in both camps. So where would you be recommending?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, you know, the Australian ecosystem, I mean, and that's why we're, you know, putting bets there because it's thriving and it has been, you know, building up for the last 10 years. And it's really exciting to see so many more unicorns coming out of Australia. And it's great then to see, you know, companies wanting to go back and list on the ASX. So definitely, we need to see more capital and liquidity, you know, coming out of the Australian market, because then those founders will reinvest back into the community.
Yeah. And Andy, I should let you have a pitch in on this one. Any thoughts on the IPO market in Australia?
I mean, big picture, I'm just thrilled by the rise and rise of kind of the Australian startup community and tech community. Probably didn't exist even a decade ago. We've got more people thinking entrepreneurially. We've got backers. We've got universities thinking about it. I was involved with Monash University. We've got an exchange program with Berkeley over in California now. They're bringing kids over and exposing them. And I just think it's great that smart kids now aren't just getting funneled into law and medicine. You know, they might be thinking about actually creating things of value and scaling globally. And I think it's brilliant.
Yeah. And then there's some massive ones. I mean, the article that pinged my attention as well in this was Afterpay at $42 billion value is now worth more than Telstra, $37 billion. You know, and it's essentially a unregulated consumer lending platform. You know, and Zip Money they've doubled in a year to $4 billion worth. And then you're seeing some startups raising good money. So Before Pay with James Spensley as their chairman, WageTap, that was one that Gelix backed last year. I mean, there's a lot of people playing in this area. I think it's completely healthy and to be encouraged. Anything else in that? Faden, do you want to pitch in? Any thoughts?
I just think it's great for founders to have another avenue in which to find some liquidity and get an outcome, rather than traditionally what it's been is trying to enter the US market or sell to a US company or a European company. So I think to Marissa's point, it's going to be fantastic, and to Andy's point, it's going to be fantastic for founders because it's going to generate more liquidity in that space.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing some really exciting Australian tech companies. And, you know, I think if you're doing 100 million plus, great, you can go to the NASDAQ. But if you're not and you're doing 10 to 50 million, then I think the ASX becomes a real avenue for that.
Yeah, I think the ASX has done a great job, in fact, at making it a little more accessible and actually encouraging tech as, the launch that was a year ago. It was one of the last events I went to before lockdown, the tech index. And that was a great move, and that's been one of the drivers of the ASX market going up a little bit this year. So it's been
It's changed so rapidly. I remember I was having a conversation 2 years ago about the fact that, tech stocks were being hammered on the ASX. They were really massively undervalued and just couldn't find any sort of good sophisticated investors to help drive their valuation.
Yeah.
But that's changed so quickly.
I think Nuix, case in point, I mean, 20 times revenue is pretty astonishing. So anyway, look, the window's open. So let's see what happens for the rest of the year. In fact, another one, maybe just before we move on from this, Redbubble. A year ago, it was about almost a tenth of this, but it's now valued at $1.8 billion. You know, so e-commerce is a big winner from COVID. And, I think those new buying habits will stick. So Redbubble, Kogan, all the rest of them doing well.
Surely safety culture is going to be somewhere there, Andy.
Yeah, give us some insight.
You'll have to ask the boss about that one. We're excited.
All right. Well, there's been a couple of other, it's not been a huge news fortnight or month for deals. I mean, January and December are normally pretty quiet in Australia, but there's a couple that caught our eye that we should mention. So AgriWeb raised $30 million. They are, when you speak to Justin, he calls it Tinder for cows. So it's kind of a farm management software tool for dairy and sheep. Fantastic. Justin and Kevin, they're both in Summit Club. They actually both rode for Oxford together. That's kind of how I know them. What else can we say about them? Justin's been on the news podcast. He's one of the only people to be on it twice. So I don't think we're trying to claim any credit for him raising that money, but it is a great piece of news and a big round.
I think continues a trend that we're seeing out of 2020, which was a lot of capital flowing to later stage companies.
Yeah.
You know, rather than the early stage space in Australia. So it's interesting. I'm not sure, Francis, you've got an opinion on that or Marissa, but we're definitely seeing still a bit of a hole in that early stage space and a lot of liquidity going to like Series B.
Yeah, look, I'm tempted to also just link in the next deal we were going to talk about as well, which is Vow, the cultured meat startup. They've raised $7.7 million, and both AgriWeb and Vow are, I think, a part of like the really exciting next generation of companies that are tackling kind of a different set of problems. I think, you know, it's great that Afterpay is worth so much and returned a lot, but in some ways it's kind of taking credit cards and payday loans and putting them on AWS with a React front end. And it's actually, you know, but agriculture is 11% of global carbon emissions. And meat is a massive component of that. And these two companies are looking at something that's, you know, a big defining change that's going to need to happen over the next, 20-30 years. So I think it's really cool that companies in Australia are getting funding, getting big, significant funding to tackle these things. And Australia's a good place to take them on. You know, despite the politics, I think there's just a great community here to back that kind of progress.
Yeah. In fact, that was the other one we were going to mention. Vow, which is a cultured meat startup. I think you can take an animal cell from any animal and create meat from it. So, you know, you can make burgers from cows, or, I mean, in theory, you can have platypus meat or panda meat. I'm not sure that we'd necessarily be doing that, but in theory, you could do that. You know, so they were the big raises.
And look, it doesn't stop there, Ian. I have an idea that I was pitching to George and Tim over drinks recently to have the super premium option where you probably have to fly to some kind of tax haven island to have this dinner party, but you get a sample from each of the people attending. I feel like there's some potential Silicon Valley general partners that are into this, that and actually grow a little steak from yourself and have a very special one of a kind meal.
That would be kind of creepy.
Faden, you touched on a really important point there. It's awesome to see, you know, big rounds being raised in Australia at that later stage, but that has left a real gap in that pre-seed seed stage, was absolutely highlighted last year. In that early stage, a lot of companies really struggled, and we're still seeing that to continue.
I think that's a risk adversity challenge in Australia. And we're kind of moving closer now, like taking more risks as other things are, you know, delivering smaller returns.
I mean, some of the major feedback that we have from founders, I mean, both through the accelerator, but also through our venture fund, is that, you know, VCs will say that they'll do first check-in, but reality is when they're actually pitching, that the market feedback is, no, we want to see revenue. And so it's very difficult if you're pre-revenue to get any type of funding. And then once you do get that, you need to be, you know, have quite a lot of traction to be able to secure the funding. Yeah. If you don't fit the typical profile as well. So that then is certainly a big gap in Australia and a risk to you know, impacting the innovation as well.
We're trying to work on that right now with Innovation Bay. We're launching, if anyone's out there, and people like Francis and Andy will be hitting you up for sure, a 6 Degrees angel network that we're launching. And this is all about, you know, founders reinvesting in founders and people in the ecosystem reinvesting in the ecosystem. We're just about to push out a really good podcast with Suze Reynolds from New Zealand Angels. And the stats are really interesting that they're investing 5 to 15K in around 5 to 6 startups a year with an average portfolio size of 20. And that's what I think that's what's missing in Australia, is people willing, you know, people bet that at the casinos or on horses, but we don't bet that on founders. We're going to try and move the goalposts here a little bit. So we're really excited about creating quite a big group of people that are willing to put a little bit of money at play into the future of the country.
Yeah, I think it is hard. If you're a first-time fund, and, you know, speaking from experience here with my Gelix hat on, it's, you know, investing smaller checks in earlier stage companies is hard work, and it's very, very risky. And, you know, as a first-time fund, you sometimes have to do that. But the flip side is you need great deal flow and you need to be able to add value. And those are things that are really, really difficult for any first-time fund that's raising. So I can understand why the bigger funds have moved on. I mean, you've just got more money to deploy and the same number of partners to deploy it from. So you have to write bigger checks. So it's definitely a problem. But yeah, the deal flow is definitely there. I mean, that's what we're seeing both with Innovation Bay and Gelix. We're seeing fantastic founders coming through. So actually, just before we move on from the Vow story, I mean, it's interesting looking at their investor roster. So Square Peg led it, Blackbird came back in, Tenacious was back in, and Grok. Now, what was interesting about Grok, which is the Cannon Brookes family money, is that they have Annie Cannon Brookes as the quote. So it's great to see Annie getting involved now. I mean, maybe she's always been involved in the investment side, but this is the first time I've seen her name referenced in a deal like this.
I think that's because Mike is too involved with the Utah Jazz at the moment, helping build the roster out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, different story. He has bought a basketball team. But Marissa, any thoughts on Annie putting her name on this stuff? It's got to be positive, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Australia has a real problem with gender diversity in the venture space. So the more women that we have investing in businesses and in those positions at, you know, general partner and partner level, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's certainly positive for the community.
Yeah, no, I definitely see that. I mean, when we look at a deal and Andrea gets involved, it's just she's got a completely different mindset. Well, not completely different, but a different approach and attitude and perception on how to look at these things. So yeah, you definitely need that, and you're both your founders and your investors.
Yeah.
Bitcoin. Should we talk about Bitcoin? Faden's shaking his head here.
We have to.
Yeah, we do. Like, you know, as I think Matt Allen gave this quote, but, you know, often you couldn't talk about Bitcoin or blockchain without wanting to punch someone in the face, but it's back. Bitcoin, I mean, it's been up around $40,000+ per Bitcoin. I mean, maybe I'm just sore that I bought 12 of them about 6 years ago at $200 and sold them all at $400 and thought I was doing really well. Should have hung on. But it is booming, and you're seeing these crazy stories. There was a programmer in the US that put him on a hard drive and locked it with a password, and he can't remember the password. And there's 7,000 Bitcoin in there, so he's got $340 million sitting there, and he can't remember the password. That's got to be a little frustrating. Yeah, any thoughts, Francis? I know you were doing some research in this, so tell us your Bitcoin perception.
I continue to not be a believer, but, you know, it just means I have to hate watch the Bitcoin price going up and up all the time, which is pretty annoying. I mean, I think I've tried very hard. I'm yet to understand, you know, the big proposition for Bitcoin. It solves a really interesting problem. I know that you can write a very long paper about how mathematically great the solution is to the kind of the communication problem that it solves, but it's just not the actual problem that money solves, which is trusting other people with a bit of an army standing behind you. So yeah, I think it seems like a lot of the discussion in the run-up to this latest spike is, you know, that bigger investors are getting into Bitcoin because they see it as kind of a hedge against the collapse of traditional institutions. And, you know, in a world of instability, that it's kind of the new alternative gold standard. And, you know, I to be very unfair to it, I'm just not sure. I feel like if it all goes to, you know, the water world and everything's collapsed, I don't know if we'll be scraping for Bitcoin in that situation. I don't see it holding its value there either. So it looks like it's been a great kind of speculative, gains for lots of people. I did see Janet Yellen today, who's the incoming nominee for the Treasury Secretary, talking about curtailing Bitcoin, which I think has got the price back down to about $30,000 US.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
So that's 25% off its high earlier this week. It'll be interesting to see because Bitcoin gets used in a lot of black market applications.
Yeah. And Andy, are you a owner of Bitcoin? What's your thoughts?
No, I wish I just had a bit of a gamble on it, but I didn't understand it. So I try and listen to my dad, who says it's better to grow rich slowly than poor quickly. Although I wish I'd just, probably, you know, do what you did, was just throw a bit at it just for fun.
Yeah. Now, Marissa, are you long in Bitcoin? Like, would you back a Bitcoin founder or a blockchain founder?
watching it at the moment, the interesting thing is when structuring our limited partnership agreement, we actually allowed for some wording around that. But you have a lot of the big established players starting to get into this space now, whether they're just hedging their bets or whether they truly see it as a currency in the future is, you know, I'm still undecided on, but I'm watching it very closely and just seeing who's getting involved and what they're actually doing with it.
Yeah, I mean, the other distasteful part of it that I don't like is just the amount of power that it consumes, which is just completely wasted power. There was another story we linked here about Iranian police confiscating 45,000 Bitcoin mining machines because they were chewing up 100 megawatts of cheap power. You know, and that's all coming from fossil fuel. So Bitcoin in some form is contributing to global warming. So yes, that you're getting some spectacular riches being created, but at what cost? And I'm not sure that's necessarily a good outcome. I mean, I think you're right mathematically and as a concept, it is brilliant. It's solid. It works. It's secure. All those other things, but you know, my issue with it is it has no utility. I mean, I can't use Bitcoin to go and buy my groceries. Well, you kind of could, but it would be very difficult, take a long time, and the transaction costs are pretty high. So there's no real utility there. And it's in that sense, just like gold. I mean, gold has no real utility beyond its scarcity. But gold is used as a store of value. So
I thought the uprise in Bitcoin recently was because PayPal backed it in some way, didn't they? Or you could use PayPal to transact with Bitcoin now?
I'm not sure I think there has been some linkages with other payment providers and maybe that is improving, but it's one of these things. It's like it'll probably keep coming up in the news podcast and all of us will scratch our head and not know any different. And it's one of these things, you can't control it. So, beyond Paul Bessette and Mike Cannon-Brookes having a bet about it, then where's the relevance?
I think we should just all say it now, buy Bitcoin on the show. Do you recommend buying Bitcoin?
Have you seen those bus adverts? I don't know who it's for, but it says, if you're seeing Bitcoin on the side of a bus, it's time to buy. And it's like, really? And that sounds like the worst time to buy.
Literally the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, and then there's another story. We'll tell this one and then move on. But there was this developer in Wales, I think, that literally threw away a hard drive which had 7,000 Bitcoin on it. And he's offering the municipal council $90 million to dig up the ground in order to try and find the hard drive so he can get his $350 million out of it. And funnily enough, they're saying, nah. We're not doing that because we won't find it and it probably won't work if we do find it. So, all right, shall we move on? Yeah, Marissa, let's ask you about this one because this cropped up and I was pretty astonished at these stats, but I'll just read it out there or the headline. So of all US startups that have been floated since 1817, which is when the stock market began, only 20 of them have been helmed or being run by women at the time. Yeah, in 2020, 442 companies listed in the US, 5 of them had women founders or CEOs. I knew it was bad, didn't know it was this bad.
Yeah, I knew it was bad, but that article and those stats, it's just appalling. And just having a look at, 2020 and drilling down into a little bit more detail there, 2019, we actually had an all-time high of, believe it or not, 2.7% of venture funding going to female-founded companies. And in 2020, we actually went backwards. So I think it was like 2.2% of venture funding. There are a whole number of reasons for that. I mean, the pandemic hit, we were talking about earlier, before the VCs were really doubling down on their portfolio companies to ensure that they would survive. Some said that they were open for business, but the reality was that they weren't really, they were investing in typically founders that they knew and a very stereotypical profile. So women didn't tend to fall into that investment profile. So what what that meant was that, you know, women got that that message pretty loud and clear last year. So they doubled down on their own businesses to focus on generating revenue. Because essentially venture funding had dried up for them overnight. We saw some really great breakout examples from Elevarco alumni like HealthMatch and CoView. So they, you know, HealthMatch raised $18 million Series B. CoView raised, you know, $6 million Series A. So
yeah, she's in Summit Club. She's great, Sylvia.
Yeah, brilliant. Like, so awesome to see that, but they were certainly not the norm. And the reason why I highlight that is because this is where it starts. It starts at this funding level. We need to get more funding to these female founders to help grow these businesses to then take them through to IPO so we can increase those numbers. Because at the end of the day, McKinsey did a study and released that and said if we actually achieve some gender equality, we could unlock almost $28 trillion from global GDP. So it's, you know, it's not only a good thing to talk about, it's actually going to make, you know, the global economies more prosperous if we have more females getting funding. So that, I mean, yeah, those numbers are just horrendous. And we need to be doing more and consciously doing more at getting funding for female founders.
And you mentioned the Bumble CEO. I mean, the Bumble IPO and their CEO, Whitney Wolf-Heard. I mean, she's 31. And I think she's going to be, you know, one of the youngest CEOs in the US to list, and certainly the youngest female one. So it's awesome to see stories like that coming through.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. We need that. I'm picking on Australia a bit because I think, you know, I love Australia, you know, Australian, but we're considering that there is zero venture funds that focus on female founders.
Scale.
Scale. Well, they're an angel network technically.
I think they've raised a fund, or they're in the process of it. I mean, I think Ariane's. Anyway, I'm not trying to nitpick here. You're right. There is very few.
We need scale to do it. You know, Alivia, we need a number, not just, you know, one or two. We need a whole lot more. They're doing that in the US. I mean, there are a couple of dozen, but there's certainly not enough. We haven't reached saturation point. And that's why you get these low numbers at that IPO level, because it's coming all the way back to the beginning in the funding for startups.
Yeah. And Andy, are you coming across how's the gender diversity at Safety Culture, and how do you think of it, and any observations in this?
I was going to say I've got a 9-year-old daughter who was living in Silicon Valley, is now back in Australia. And I feel like it's a big ecosystem. So, you know, it probably starts with parents and schooling and then university and then the workplace. So, you know, having girls thinking about this, learning to code, learning, you know, all this kind of stuff is super important. It doesn't kind of happen by accident. Like changing their dreams, you know, talking about what's possible. I was super lucky. We've actually been filming a founder series showing the stories of some of the most successful Australian entrepreneurs. And we've just been working with Mel Perkins from Canva.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and she is young. She is absolutely brilliant. She's the real deal. And I'm like so delighted that people like that exist that can inspire not just women, also, you know, older guys like myself. Like, I think it's wonderful. But I think, you know, it doesn't happen by accident, and we have to rethink education and parental values and a whole lot of different things to make a more robust system for females.
And Francis, any observations here?
Oh, look, I just want to flag the upside that I'm a stay-at-home dad benefiting from the fact that my wife's about to launch back into work as well. So let's not forget the benefit of dad's getting to take a break. Let's not unlock the whole $28 trillion. I'm happy for that to just just move a little bit from men to women. It's fine.
Yeah, that's great.
I think it's also timing too, isn't it? I was looking at a stat the other day that was saying the average politician in Australia is a 51-year-old white male who has a law degree, but the average voter in Australia is a 34-year-old woman.
Yeah.
And so I think it's going to be really exciting in the next 5 to 10 years to see how, you know, our voters impact who our politicians are, who our leaders are, and how we as a group help change the culture of the companies that we're working with. And the Angel Network that we've just launched in Melbourne, we've limited membership to 10 people and 4 of them are women. We're really super happy about that.
Yeah.
As a starting point, at least.
Yes. Yeah. And I couldn't agree more with, there are so many elements that are important here. And Andy touched on it from the, you know, from the home environment and the teachers. I mean, it even goes to the shows that we watch. I mean, Hollywood was a big problem with, stereotyping the male geeky tech founder. But Netflix has been brilliant in actually coming out with a whole lot of different series of, you know, strong females, but they look very different. It's not just a white female. They're different colors, you know, backgrounds, all sorts of things. So I think it's definitely a multifaceted problem that needs to be approached in, you know, a lot of different ways.
All right, we're into the last 5 minutes or so, so let's pick up some of the more fun stories. So, yeah, Faden, this may be one for you, but have we reached peak wealth? Mike Cannon-Brookes buys into the Utah Jazz basketball team. What do you think of that?
Great thing, he's done it with a whole bunch of people that he knows really well. So he's done it with a bunch of the Excel folk and with the guy, I can't remember the company's name, out of Utah that sold to Oracle, Ryan Smith, I think it was. So it's pretty cool that, yeah, that's right, Qualtrics. So it's pretty cool that he's kind of done that with that kind of group of folk. And I think Ryan from Qualtrics, if you know the Jazz, they were previously owned by Mormons, and I think he's a major sponsor of them, and there's been a long-term relationship there. So it's pretty cool that he's sort of doing that sort of stuff.
Yeah, but it's kind of a sign of peak wealth, isn't it? Like when you've got billions of dollars and what you're going to do with it.
I think the discerning thing in general is the disparity of wealth at the moment that we're experiencing in society, which we've seen in the US probably amplify more than anywhere else in the world. Lucky as Australia, we still have a bit more balance than the US does. But I think that's the really kind of concerning thing for me, is that separation and how the middle class has kind of got left behind a little bit.
And Francis, what about you? Like when you sell Propeller for $10 billion and you become a billionaire, like are you going to buy a basketball team? Like what are you thinking here?
No, I mean, it's I'm looking forward to that. I'm pretty sports mad, but I'd probably try and buy Arsenal or something. What's his name? Anyway, but we've been talking about basically how much asset prices are up. Like, you know, coronavirus is kind of, at first it like tanked the stock market, and then everyone noticed like, oh, only just tech companies are going to be left, and interest rates are so down that asset prices are all just massively, massively inflating in every sector. It's, you know, whether it's Bitcoin or tech stocks, you know, house prices continue to go up in Australia somehow. And it's you know, people who rely on interest looking for yield, but it's driving up prices so much across all these different kind of capital stocks and just making inequality so much worse. I think it's a massive thing. I'm sad Elizabeth Warren didn't actually get the nod, even though I'm not sure she would have won the election, because I think, you know, that she's got big interesting proposals that talk about that. So maybe I'd spend some of the $10 billion on actually advocating for taxing capital instead of income.
Yeah.
But just quickly on that, just one thing, I do think it's awesome that Mike brought an NBA franchise. And I think we need more Mikes, because if you look back at what he's done for society in general with things like the Room to Read charity that he's been supported with Atlassian for since they started, and all the stuff he's doing on environment, renewables, and reinvesting in Australian tech companies, you know, he's someone that's definitely reallocating that capital back into society, and we need more of that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah,
Andy,
you might require a kid to be more entrepreneurial as well, rather than, you know, be a doctor or a lawyer or something.
Yeah. Now we can never. We've only got 2 minutes left, so we can never end, or we can never have one of these shows fading without talking about Elon Musk. So once again, he's in the news. He became the world's richest man, but it seems to be this daily rich again, less rich again. So it's between him and Bezos. You know, they've got about 180 billion. US net worth each. I didn't realize this, but Elon Musk owns 20% of Tesla and 48% of SpaceX. So two companies that are redefining the world. But, you know, $182 billion is just, I mean, it's mind-blowing kind of wealth. So I don't know whether there's much to say in this, but Marissa, I'll throw it to you. What do you think about Elon Musk? Maybe we'll use that as this question.
Elon Musk, well, I've read his book and I have to say it was a very inspiring book. So it's, I mean, the guy has had, you know, yes, he's had the, you know, fortune over the years, but also a lot of, you know, adversity and been able to overcome that. You know, he's a bit of a mad scientist, but I mean, at the same time, he's really redefined, a number of industries over here. So, you know, we need more of those, you know, creative types that are going to push the boundaries and reimagine our future. I mean, they're talking about from 10 years from now, being able to have, colonies, you know, hotels and things up on the moon. I mean,
Well, you know, it's a million people to Mars by 2050. I mean, that's the stuff that just blows your mind.
Ian's already bought his ticket.
I would do, but it's too expensive. You need to make more money.
Last book, read it if you haven't.
Sorry, Andy, what was that?
I'm just saying it's a brilliant book. I absolutely agree with Marissa. Yeah. Like, if you haven't read it, just read it. His story is ridiculous. And even if he just did one of those things, but the fact he's done multiple things in quite diverse areas is super impressive.
Yeah. All right, look, I think we're officially out of time. Andy, I know you've got to get to a meeting with Luke, so he'll be you'll be in the naughty corner if you don't make it in time. So let us call it there. So Francis, Marissa, Andy, thank you so much. Great job, Faden. And thank you everyone for listening. We'll see you in 2 weeks' time.
Excellent. Thank you.
Absolutely my pleasure. Cheers, everyone.
Good stuff.
Thanks, Dave.